Hi guys, in today's episode of the podcast, I interview my friend Kim about the loss of her husband, Woody. Woody was in the very early stages of a startup. When things started to go badly, he had trouble sleeping, he was pretty stressed, and tragically ended up taking his own life. His wife, Kim, very bravely talks through her experience and tells that story on today's podcast. So again, this is a little bit more of an adult conversation, probably not one to listen to with the kiddos, and one that may have some triggers for people who are particularly prone to suicidal thoughts. So please decide whether this is a good time and place for you in your life to listen to this particular story. I will say that we launched our book on Wednesday, on the 21st, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Shit Together. And Kim's experience is exactly why we wrote the book. It's exactly why we do the podcast. It is the reason behind everything that we do at Zen Founder. It is not to sell books or really to make money. It is because Rob and I both want to communicate in every way we possibly can that founding a company is hard, and that being in the midst of the grind of doing a startup is very, very hard. And you are not crazy if you can't sleep well. And there are resources that are available to help. We've tried to put some of those do-it-yourself resources together in the book. That's what it's for. But bottom line, if you are struggling, you need to know you are not alone. It is not a failure on your part that you're finding the experience of being an entrepreneur very difficult. So you'll hear that in this episode today, and I hope that you'll hear that throughout everything we do at Zen Founder. Like, take home compelling message on repeat. It's okay to struggle. You don't have to do that by yourself.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I'm also known as Dr. Wine.
We know this woman, non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Kim, would you talk to me a little bit about the decision that you and Woody made for him to transition from kind of traditional employment into being an entrepreneur, being involved in a startup?
Sure. Well, first of all, Woody was really excited. There was a new opportunity that was presented to him. It was with a startup company, electric company. And he was a big environmentalist. So he was really looking forward to this opportunity and felt like this was kind of his dream job that married not only his interest of business, but also doing something good for the environment and lowering the, you know, the footprint or whatnot, whatever you call it in electrical land, in the environment. So we were really smart. I will say this about making the decision, because I think when you start a business, you have to really, and you're married or you have a partner, you really, it becomes kind of a family decision in some ways, because you have to really look at the way you have, you know, how you live your life. And when you start a business or get involved with a startup, there is definitely, you know, income changes, time changes, just different things that impact the family. So for us, when we originally bought our home, and I was working at that time full-time as well, but when we went and started our life together, it was really important to Woody that we bought a home that was, that we could afford on one salary as opposed to two salaries. And the reason was because if we ever wanted for one of us to stay home with having children, or if we wanted to start a business, it gave us the flexibility. So that was definitely something that we put into play well before we actually, you know, Woody made the decision to go on his own. He left a pretty, you know, he's a salesperson. He was left a very successful sales position, again, for trying something new and really felt like it was time. So
it's neat. I mean, I think that part of the story resonates so much with folks who are listening, because it's this opportunity to do something that really you value, that matters to you. And sometimes that means, you know, carving out your own job, your own business, making something new that, you know, provides a service or fills a need that's not being met already.
Exactly. I think, you know, that was the whole thing with Woody, you know, is leaving the world a better place. That was definitely one of his missions. And I think, you know, he really saw it as a way that you could cut the cost of your lighting bill, but get double the lighting efficiencies. And so it was really like a passion of his too, which I never knew this, but I did know that he was definitely into the whole recycling movement before it became one.
So the two of you are talking about this, and it sounds like you'd set yourselves up even before this particular decision to have the flexibility to be able to do something like this, to take a job risk without being completely stressed or pressed in terms of like meeting your basic financial obligations. And it sounds like this started with a lot of careful planning, but also a lot of optimism and excitement.
Absolutely. You have to have both of those, right? I mean, I think you have to have the planning that was done. And again, I don't, you know, that was well many years before, but I think Woody always had this dream of doing something on his own, especially when he had worked for smaller family-owned businesses in sales. He, you know, saw that the rewards were there and really found this other passion or this opportunity that came to him. And Woody was definitely really excited about it. He was one of those like super high energy guys, kind of classic sales person in a way. So he was definitely really positive and excited about this opportunity. And of course, then that, you know, there's a little stress when it's, you know, when my life would change a little bit too. But when you see the passion that he had and also knowing the person he was of being very well planned and very methodical too. So it wasn't like he just kind of winged it. There was a lot of planning and preparation to get ready to do this move.
So you were sharing is in his excitement, even though obviously it meant some significant changes for you, some stress for you, I would imagine.
Sure. Yep. Absolutely. You know, I mean, part of that is just we always managed our budgets on one salary. So that meant, oh, well, wait, there goes less shoe money for me.
Some lifestyle changes for sure. So how did it go as he got started? You know, he makes this decision to leave his job and working in partnership with some other folks jumps into the startup. What were the early days like?
I think the early days were a lot of meetings for him, a lot of phone calls, a lot of just kind of getting himself into another industry. And I think being that he was a salesperson by training, that he's taken on many different industries, you know, those first couple, even months before he jumped in, I would say he did a lot of prep work even before jumping in to understand the industry, who are the competitors, were there any competitors? Kind of laying out a business plan, like what were the big clients going to be? Who were the clients? You know, as anything when you start, and I think that's the thing with a plan, it's a plan, right? It's a nice kind of moving, you have to have some structure in there, but you also have to be able to be flexible because it may not look like the way you originally thought it was going to look. So there's a lot of that. And then one thing I would say that I noticed, you know, Wood was a guy who always was like needed his 8 hours of sleep. Like he was a big sleeper. So that was definitely something that, you know, he had sleep starting to impact him, you know, because there's just lots of ideas. And, you know, when you're starting, when you've been in an industry for so long and you could almost do that job on autopilot, I think that is a complete opposite experience of when you start your own business. You know, you're constantly all those things that you never really had to worry about because somebody else was worrying about it. You know, you start like things are always popping in your mind at all hours of the day, night, whatnot. So that's definitely something that I would say like early days.
And I think most of the people who are listening to this who are entrepreneurs will like absolutely 100% resonate with that sense of your mind being really immersed in this new enterprise that you're working on. And that is very different, as you say, than maybe having a traditional job or having the experience of building yourself into a career where you know the ropes and you're pretty comfortable and things are smooth and taken care of. Once you step off of that path and into the path of doing it yourself, there's always something to be thinking about and planning. And even if you're not super stressed, your mind is busy. Your mind is working.
Right. Because there's always, you know, you're constantly thinking about how do you do it? Even how do you do it better? How do you, or things that you never thought about, especially it's something new. It wasn't in a, almost like a box where you're like, oh, yep, I know this. And you kind of can follow the next natural. It's like you have to relearn. And so your mind is always active, always thinking.
So you began to see Woody experience some sort of strain under that in that he was just not sleeping as well as he had previously slept.
Mm-hmm. Right. I definitely noticed that he was, you know, his mind was constantly moving. You know, he had ideas going, but that would have been the only thing other than the fact that he was really excited about it. And even if I look back, I'm not sure I'd even really say that I noticed it that much, because it was kind of nice that he wasn't a guy that needed his 8 hours, because he'd be somebody that would just fall asleep, you know, out at dinner. If he was tired, like he had no problem taking a nap anywhere. So I don't know if I really even paid attention as much, but looking back, I think that's the one thing I did notice.
So this, up to this point in this conversation, this story of Woody jumping into the startup and starting this business all sounds like hundreds and thousands of other entrepreneurs who have gone through a similar process. Obviously, Woody's story took a very, very different turn. What began to unravel?
I would say the big thing that started to unravel was the idea of sleep. And then I think the fact that he did need sleep, that he wasn't used to waking up in the middle of the night thinking about things. So I would say that it was really the sleeplessness that started to become a point where, or impact him enough. And I remember I was getting ready to go out of town for a business trip. And he said, you know, I think I'm going to go to the doctor because I need to get sleep. And so that's really at the point where I think things obviously in our story went completely south, is really that start of not understanding that sleep and or lack of or the middle of the night wake up calls are just probably pretty normal for people who are starting a business or starting a project or, you know, in some ways, human, just being a human too. So that's really at the point where he wanted to do something about it. And so Wood was a guy that always trusted and went to the doctor. He was a huge believer in the physician as being a part of his healing because he was a big athlete. And, obviously surgeons fixed his knees and replaced and, you know, stitched him up when he had hit his head in basketball. So like he just naturally was like, I'm going to go to the doctor, which I think is not uncommon for a lot of people. It's kind of the first reaction, right? So he went to his family doctor that he's gone to for years and just really was hoping to get a little relief and help him sleep.
And again, just a very kind of normative experience that many of us have had where there's a change in life, something happens, we're not sleeping as well, we begin to feel the effects of that and we seek some help.
Exactly. And so he went to his doctor and which is a pretty typical experience. You know, you go seek relief, go to your family doctor, you maybe get 15 minutes with them. And so during this course, he was telling me he started a new business. He was having trouble sleeping and the physician gave him some samples of a drug and said, I think you should take this. And this being an antidepressant, but at the time, and Zoloft samples, and said, this will help take the edge off and help you sleep. So what he did, what most people do, they, you know, thanks, doc, trust what they're given is will help them. And what he left with a 3-week sample pack of a very powerful mind-altering drug, you know, an antidepressant for something that he went in just because he wasn't able to sleep.
But not a depression diagnosis.
Nope. His diagnosis said insomnia.
Okay. And what happened from there, Kim?
Well, from there, I was, like I'd mentioned, I was getting ready to go on a trip. I happened to be on a 3-week business trip down in New Zealand. So I was not at home when Woody came home with this drug that he thought was going to help him sleep. And from there, I think things went really south. Woody started having, ironically, worsened insomnia, couldn't sleep. He was constantly moving. He almost like, you know, there was like, he was, and I say that constantly moving because he was just like more almost agitated. And this is all things that he was mentioning. And during this time, I was still talking to him and he just kept telling me it doesn't feel right. He was losing weight. He had diarrhea, but those were all kind of side effects that the doctor said you might have with this drug. And I'm not even sure that, you know, I can tell you right now that Woody didn't really do any research on the drug. I think he just kind of just trusted. And it was, you know, sample packs. So after the first week, it was 25 milligrams. And the second week, it doubled it to 50 milligrams. And so he's having this horrific experience and at home, but not knowing what's happening to him and still trying to do his business. He was a big runner, and he was pretty anal. So he always kept a track of his running. So he was running during this time. And I'm, again, way down under. I come back and this is what I remember, like the most significant thing. I was waiting for Wood to come home. This is now 3 weeks into Woody's experience on the drug. And now he's got an official prescription. And I came home early from work. I was excited to make him dinner. And I'll never forget, Woody came in our back door and he had a blue dress shirt on with a white t-shirt under, and he was completely drenched through it. He dropped the bag at the back door and got into fetal position on our kitchen floor and with his hands around his head like a vice. He's like, "Kim, you got to help me. I don't know what's happening to me. It's like my head's outside my body looking in. You got to help me. You got to help me." And he's just crying. I was like, oh my God. And I'm thinking to myself, what? You know, and we calmed.
Right. This is my husband who's professional, you know, who you've known all this time and who's never had anything like this.
Never. And I was married, you know, we were married for almost 10 years and dated 3 years before that. I've never seen this. So I remember we got him calmed down enough and got him, you know, I said, you know, let's breathe, let's pray, let's do yoga. Like I was trying to do anything. And then finally, I remember even saying to him, I go, "Wood, if your job is so stressful, you should quit. You're not a failure." Like I remember thinking it was his job. Right.
He was stressed about the new business.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, I remember clearly saying that to him, that if, you know, you're not a failure if you can't do that, like thinking that's what it was.
Sort of like this is not worth this level of upset. Like for you to be in this state where you're so far away from your real self, like this isn't worth it.
Absolutely. I'd never seen him like cry. I mean, just the whole thing. And, so we calmed him down. I remember like telling him, you know, you should really talk to your doctor about this. So goes, talks to the doctor, and the doctor says, you got to give these drugs 4 to 6 weeks to kick in. So, you know, Wood being a military brat, you know, he's very much about authority. The doctor, like, you know, of course the doctor says to do it, you do it. And so literally for the next week, every single night he'd be like, what would come home after working, and he would get up early. Like he was a big early runner. He was an early to rise guy. And every night, the next week of his life, he said to me, "Kim, what do you think about hypnosis? I'm going to beat this feeling in my head." Then it was like, "What do you think about acupuncture? I'm going to beat this feeling in my head." Everything was about beating this feeling in my head. And of course it still meant nothing to, you know, I'm just thinking, God, if this is your job, like, and I'm thinking, is it job related, stress related? You know, never have seen this before. So anyways, he was during this time really trying to figure out, in classic Woody fashion, he always figured out things. You know, he was a planner, he was a solver, like problem solver, like he thought differently. So anyways, that next week, that was his experience. And never did I expect what happened after that. I was getting ready to go out of town again for business. And I had left and we were getting ready. We just had a big party at our house for a bunch of for friends who were getting married. And the next day we were planning our 10-year anniversary trip. We were trying to have kids and couldn't without doing in vitro. So we were trying to get the appointment set up to do that. Had all these plans. I'm leaving just on a Monday morning, like many people do. And literally never did I think that would be the last time I'd ever see him alive. 2 days later, I called, you know, we both traveled a lot throughout our married life. And so we had our ways of checking in and we always like left each other notes and we called and we talked all the time. And so during that, you know, again, during that time, those couple days calling him and asking him how, you know, everything was going. Again, not much giving much thought other than, you know, I'm being a supportive wife.
Right. He's having a hard time. You're checking in. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just checking in, just chatting, talking about my job, like funny stories, like, you know, nothing out of the norm. Then I'll never forget, it was on a Tuesday and I hadn't heard from him. I had talked to him the night before and, you know, we're just chatting and he's like, I love you. But I could tell that he seemed like he was really distant. And then the next morning I call him, I don't hear from him. Then I send him an email. Then I call him, I send him an email. And then finally, you know, this is back in 2003. So we still had a home answering phone service. And so I call our voicemail at home and I heard one of the business partners he was on that he had started this business with call and say, "Hey, Woody, where are you? We've got a huge meeting tomorrow at Target." And I was like, okay, that's weird.
Like he's not responding to you. And now, you know, he's not responding to his business partners.
And the fact that they called him at home and not on his cell phone. Like there was like that right there was what? That seems odd. Like Woody's super responsible. Like, and knowing that he was really excited because he got them into a big meeting with Target that had a potential to like change, you know, the course of a fairly new, like, 2-month-old business, right? And so I was like, okay, that doesn't make sense. So then I was just, you know, I'm in the middle of my shoot. And so I didn't really think about it. And then another like hour, I call him again. And then finally at about 8 o'clock at night, I call my dad, my parents. And I'm like, "Hey dad, would you do me a favor? Would you just go over and check on Woody? Cause I haven't heard from him. And you know, he's been having trouble sleeping and I'm just afraid he might've fallen and hit his head or something. Cause I have literally not heard from him all day." And so my dad's like, "Sure." So my parents go over or my dad went over and Wood's car was out in the driveway. So my dad had keys, went in the house. He wasn't there. Then he goes out to our garage and opens the garage door and finds Woody hanging. And I will never for the life of me forget that call that I got from my dad who said, "Kim, it's bad. It's bad." I'm like, "What?" And they're like, he's dead. I'm like, "What?" Like I literally could not even fathom it. And then I'm like, "What do you mean?" No, I'm like, "What do you mean he's dead?" And he's like, I'm like, "How do you know he's dead?" And my dad's like, "He's hanging." I'm like, "Hanging?" Like that in itself made even further sense of any of it because Woody loved life. He was super, like, if you felt like he was one of those guys, you walk into a room and you felt his energy and literally he lit up a room like he was just on fire. And like taking his own life, like literally made no sense to this day. Like, and to this day, all these years later and all the stuff and the work I do, I still think about that. And I'm like, it makes no sense. So obviously my life in one phone call completely changed the course of my life, Woody's life, our family's life, and put me in a new kind of space and really eventually became the work that I do today, advocacy. But literally the day that when they called about an hour later after, you know, my dad obviously had to call the police and the coroner and all those guys that come to one of these tragedies. And they called me and said, you know, "Was he taking anything?" And I'm like, again, didn't really, again, pay any attention to what it was. And I'm like, yeah, I think it was like something. And she goes, oh, there's a pill jar, a bottle of Zoloft right by the back door. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. And then I was thinking, well, that's weird because it was by the back door, right? Like it was up in our medicine cabinet. And then, so that night, my brother-in-law was over there as well, because at that point my parents had called my family, and he was over there, and the coroner said, well, I'm going to take this bottle. It might have something to do with his death. And it was like, what? You know, this is, you know, my life, I'm in Detroit. My life has fallen apart. And this is what the coroner is telling my brother-in-law. I'm going to take this bottle with her. It might have had something to do with his death. So that night, you know, I'm trying to process the fact of none of this made sense. My brother-in-law goes home and Googles Zoloft and suicide and was shocked at all the stuff that had come up on the history of this drug. And granted, this was in 2003. There were no warnings. And ironically, the day that Woody was found, the front page of the Minneapolis Star Tribune had an article that said the UK finds link between antidepressants and suicide in teens. And literally, it's almost like this was all kind of, you know, I can look at it back now. There was a purpose in this because that was like his note. There was no note. And we left notes all the time. But that was almost like that was his note. Like all of this was right there, literally. And in the deepest part of me, knowing that none of it made sense. I'm like, Woody went into the doctor because he wasn't sleeping. And then he was having all this head outside the body. So, you know, looking back, but
looking back, you see the pieces come together in a different way. But when you're in the middle of it, you're just like problem solving one problem at a time. And you don't see the big picture of how all these symptoms come together to paint a picture of,
And
this is the wrong medicine.
Right. And I look back now and from the beginning, his death made no sense to me, as you can hear, or as I mentioned. So literally we started what became my advocacy work. But when we started looking into these drugs and then, you know, the fact that the coroner said that, I had no experience with any of these type mental health drugs at all. And neither had Woody. You know, if you look back at a guy like Woody, his nickname in high school was Two Brew Tim, because he would have one beer, he'd be fine. Two made him completely drunk. He could have a glass of wine, but two glasses he'd be like drunk. He couldn't drink coffee. He did not use NyQuil because NyQuil, he would have he'd be completely hungover in the morning. And then there's me, you know, who I could give me NyQuil, I'm fine. Give me a bottle of wine, I'm fine. Like, you know, our bodies are so different in the way they process. And so looking back, Woody went in for something that's a pretty common thing. And whether or not you're starting a business or not, you know, having trouble sleeping, you know, having ideas, thoughts, you know, sometimes middle of the night wake up calls, as I like to refer them to, are just the way that your body's finally quiet. But, you know, I do a lot of talking and speaking to medical professions today. And I always say that, you know, looking at the reason Woody came in, if you actually know your patient, he's an entrepreneurship, or an entrepreneur starting something, even if you're starting a new big, huge project at work, that does not classify as a mental illness. It also, you know, there should be quite a few things that we could have done or should have been done and told, you know, as options for Woody besides just throwing a pill at this problem.
And you've now spent years and years really as an advocate on all, you know, all levels of this process, whether through the FDA or testifying before Congress to try to help this not happen again, to try to make sure that these medicines, when they're prescribed because people really need them and they're prescribed appropriately. And I, you know, as someone who has seen medicine keep people alive, as well as obviously when it's misused, it can be something that contributes to their downfall. What do you wish you and Woody had known? Obviously the medication piece, there's a lot of things that you should have been told or like he should have been aware of before beginning a medicine like Zoloft. But thinking about the transition, the entrepreneur piece, what do you wish you'd known or maybe thought about differently looking back?
You know, I would say one of the things that I wish that we would have been more aware of is this idea of, you know, like that it impacts your sleep, that it can impact your sleep. The fact that your mind might be racing with ideas, and it's a different thing. It's because you're constantly thinking about something. You're, in a way, you're birthing something, right? And through that, there's all sorts of changes that you need to be aware of, that as you transition from a more consistent, stable income, you know, that income's going to change, your lifestyle might have to change. I do think that we had talked about the family support piece of it that I think is really important. But I really wish that we would have known that this is just all part of the process.
Sort of normalized it for you.
I just wish that we would have known, in that fact that, you know, maybe there and maybe been armed with tools that we could have used during this time. Maybe it meant, guess what, you need to work harder. Like maybe there's some kind of mental piece of it, component of it, yoga, maybe it's breathing, maybe it's talking it through. Maybe there's peer groups that you can have that maybe, you know, Wood's talking to me and I'm his wife and, you know, but maybe there are other people that other entrepreneurs that he could have connected with to realize that, wait, this is normal. Like, I'm not going crazy, or, you know, this is part of the process, or that idea of maybe having a mentor, somebody who's already been through it, would have been really, I think, helpful, that it wasn't Woody's mind. And then you put the whole drug piece on top of it. And that's a whole nother, that's what my work's been about. But because that's a side effect that people aren't aware of. And I would say that now bringing that piece into it, that if somebody chooses to do this and go the medication route, there are a lot of, these are not benign drugs. These are serious mind-altering drugs.
They're powerful medicines.
They're powerful medicines. And there's a side effect that is something that the companies have kept from the public, and it's called akathisia, which is that side effect that I saw Woody doing, which was constantly moving head outside.
Like the sweating.
Yeah, well, the head outside the body, where he felt like he was detached from his body. Those are actually things that were from the medication that I wasn't aware of. So I would say that if somebody does choose to go that route, that it's a family process, that people are aware of, that you are starting something, a drug, to be on the lookout if you see something that's not normal. Like looking back, a lot of this stuff was not normal behavior at all for Woody. But, you know, part of it, I was out of town, like the perfect storm, but also thinking, he was also in a transition.
Sure.
Of starting a new business. So, you know, I just kind of chucked a lot of things off to that. You know, I'm doing my work, you're doing your work. So I think there's, those are all some lessons or things that I wish I would have known then. But I definitely think and believe that as much as Woody's goal was to, you know, change the world with this electric, energy efficient lighting that he was going to, I believe that the legacy that he left on the world is far different than we planned. But I also feel like there's so many lessons in Woody's story that can be really helpful for people going through entrepreneurship, life transitions, as well as, you know, just being aware of what could go bad and could go wrong, and not always looking for the quick pill solution, which is it's easy to do when you're in these times of stress.
Yeah. And I think we could talk forever and ever about kind of the approaches to healthcare and the problems with them in our country. But when you go to a doctor sort of asking, I have this problem, I have this symptom, treat this symptom, that's obviously one route. But I think the bigger picture of, I am in the process of reshaping my life, and it's heavy and huge, and it's affecting my body and my mind and my relationships. How can I do that well without treating it like a singular symptom that needs a medication, but treating it as this, you know, this birthing process or this life overhaul that is, by the nature of what it is, going to have some sleepless nights and going to have some hard things associated with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's another whole show, another yeah. whole topic, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, I say that all the time, you know, our whole system that we don't allow for questions, for somebody to understand what you're going through, because, you know, right there, looking back, and even I've had conversations with the physician that they could have actually talked more about and maybe had other recommendations like, oh, you're starting a new business. Or here's somebody else who's done this. Or, you know, I mean, there's just so many different things that could have been done that weren't.
I run these groups called Zen Tribes, which are groups of entrepreneurs, like 6 to 8 entrepreneurs. We get together and I have kind of it's a loose curriculum, but it's like a set of things that we go through. And second week, the second time that we talk together, we talk about sleep and nutrition and movement. Those very basic building blocks that have to be in place for people to be able to function well in their work. And, you know, we were doing this before you and I met, before I knew Woody's story, but it's just such confirmation for me that without those basic pieces in place, we become all the more vulnerable to all manner of like bad outcomes, whether that's with our health or with the failure of our business, because we just can't function when there's this sort of betrayal happening between our minds and our bodies.
Absolutely. I think you're onto something. And I love the idea that it's called Zen Tribe, because I think it's the Zen piece of it, you know, going into like mind, body, spirit, all kind of connected. And then tribe being that idea of we're connected as people, and the importance and the power of people being connected in like-minded or similar situations, whether you start in business, you start realizing, wait, we're all together in this. I'm not alone. I don't need to suffer alone. And definitely that whole piece of sleep, you know, I think about just when I don't get much sleep myself and what happens, I start losing, you know, that's when accidents can happen. You're just not at your game, top of your game. You can make maybe poor decisions, and then you're not eating well or sleeping well. Then you're like, you start eating poorly, and then you're like, oh, I don't have time to, you know, the little bit of sleep I did get, I didn't want to get up early to go to the gym. I mean, you know, you start seeing that cycle and how important really those three things together to keep you in that positive mindset to be the best at whatever it is that you're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there are millions of ways in which your life has been altered by Woody's experience and what happened to Woody. And I think you are just an exemplar of resilience when you think about how you've taken Woody's experience, your experience, and just directly translated into the question of how do we make life better for other people? How do we make sure that we do everything we can to prevent this kind of experience from happening to someone else, some other family, even as you are also running your own business and being an entrepreneur yourself? So I'm so deeply grateful for you sharing your story with me and with the Zen Founder audience, and just have incredible respect for you and for the way that you have honored who Woody was.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm honored to be a part of being able to tell and share Woody's story. It's my legacy for him, and also to make sure that his life was not in vain. And I think to your point of, you know, life happens to us, and good, bad, whatever. And we don't always get a choice of what happens. And most of the time we don't, but we get the choice of what do we do with it. And I chose to do this because I know that this is what Woody would have done.
If people want to learn more about you, learn more about Woody or about your advocacy work, what's the best way for people to follow you or keep up with what you're doing?
Sure. I started an organization, Woody Matters, so they can follow me. I have an old website. It's in the process of being revamped, but I'm on Twitter, Facebook as Woody Matters. Also Kim Witzak at Kim@WoodyMatters. They can email me. I also started another website that I was really a conference that I brought to the States called Selling Sickness, which is really this idea of the selling process of our healthcare, as opposed to doing what you're talking about, which is sleep, nutrition, movement. So anyways, that's another way. And I would love to hear from audience. I also, like you mentioned, have my own business and run my own business and my advocacy at the same time. And I have a lot of the same stresses. I wake up in the middle of the night. I have a lot of those, but I'm glad I have the tools, and I'm a huge believer in giving tools that can actually, like sleep, nutrition, and movement, I think are super important. And so thank you so much for allowing me to be on your show.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.